Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me and my guest, David Pittman, as we talk about the correlation between childhood sexual abuse and substance abuse and addiction tonight. I'm so excited to have David here with us, and I'm going to start by just telling you a little bit about myself in case you don't know me and how David and I met, and then David's going to jump right into it and tell us his story and why he thinks it's important to talk about how common substance abuse and addiction is for those who were sexually abused as children. So my name is Rachel Grant, and I'm a sexual abuse recovery coach. I work with people who have been sexually abused and are sick and tired of feeling broken, unfixable, and burdened by the past. I focus on helping them heal the pain of the past and move on and feel normal. And you can certainly learn more about me at rachelgrantcoaching.com, and happy to answer any questions that you might have about that. But more importantly, David and I met, has it been 2 years now?
Yes.
I think it's been
something like,
you know, what I knew immediately when David reached out and we began talking about our what we have in common and our journey and what our heart is as far as the work that we're doing to help survivors, what I knew immediately about David is that this guy is all heart. And he cares deeply, he cares genuinely, and he's a force to be reckoned with. Also, there in the short time since he began his organization, he's just grown leaps and bounds, and they are doing just amazing, amazing work. And so you guys are really in for a real treat to hear his story and to have him here and also available to answer your questions is just amazing. So a little bit about his background. He is the executive director of Together We Heal, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. His purpose is to provide counseling and guidance for those who have suffered the trauma of childhood sexual abuse. Together We Heal really works to educate the public through public speaking, collaboration with other groups to raise awareness, and exposing sexual predator methods. As a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, David understands the importance of informing parents on how to better protect their children and help survivors begin the healing process. David spent years on a healing journey that continues to this very day, and this leads him to seek out groups specifically for men, as well as though, those who had been through a similar trauma and ultimately inspired the foundation of Together We Heal. Today, Together We Heal is working with therapists, counselors, and groups aiding both men and women in their efforts to heal, grow, and thrive. And as if that wasn't enough, David is also working in collaboration with SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. He leads support groups for survivors of CSA. Right now, they meet weekly in Fort Lauderdale at a local area hospital, but are certainly in the process of joining together with other survivor groups to show folks how they can start a support group in their own town. So definitely make a note of that. You may end up wanting to lead one of these groups by the time we're finished tonight, and we'll certainly tell you more about how you could do that. So, David, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Rachel. First, let me say what an honor it is to work with you again, how much I appreciate all that you do to help our fellow survivors. Because I know what a blessing you've been and continue to be in my life and the lives of others. So
absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
I
guess you want me to just kind of start off, give you a little bit about my story?
Please, yeah. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you got started working with survivors.
Okay. For the better part of 30 years, I kept a secret that really it almost killed me. From the time I was 12 until the time I was 15, I was sexually abused by my youth minister at Rehoboth Baptist Church in Tucker, Georgia. And I name him. His name is Frankie Wiley. His full name is Franklin Andrew Wiley. And I do that so that if there are others listening who may have come in contact with him, I want those survivors to know they're not alone. But due to the pathetic statute of limitation laws in Georgia and almost every state in the U.S., he walks free. Even up until recently, he was still serving as an associate minister at Trinity Baptist Church in Ashburn, Georgia. And while he no longer holds an official position at the church, he still has access to the LaBoys because the pastor of the church defends him. Mm-hmm. Back in 2006, I found Frankie serving as a youth minister at Jotico Road Baptist Church, where Jerry Light was the pastor. And so I contacted Pastor Light, told him my story, and he and the chairman of deacons, after doing their due diligence about me, you know, going back and making sure I wasn't just making this up, they confronted Frankie. And Frankie admitted to both men that, yes, it was true, he had sexually abused me. So they, of course, fired him on the spot, and Frankie then went back to get help at his family at a previous church in Flowery Branch, Georgia. And they were made aware of the circumstances. They, too, told him to leave. He then returned to his hometown in Ashburn, got a job at a school as a substitute teacher. And do you see the trend of where he mm-hmm. keeps going from one place to another, as these predators do, where they have access to children? Mm-hmm. So I called the superintendent, told him. He did the same, you know, research, and so they mm-hmm. fired him. And I continue to do this. I continue to track his activity. Even if you go and look at his Facebook page or his MySpace, it's filled with preteens. You know, it's mm-hmm. like it's opened up a whole new world of potential victims for him.
Yeah.
And there's an important update I wanted to give your listeners. When I first came forward about my own abuse in October of 2012, I thought I was the only one. But as of today, January 29th, a total of 7 men have come forward from 3 different churches.
Wow.
Their ages from when the abuse occurred ranged from 9 years old to 15. Hmm. That Frankie raped or molested or sexually assaulted in some way prior to, during, or after the time he had sexually abused me. I'll go more into names later. One that I want to specifically mention is Andy Harrell. Andy gave me his permission to use his name prior to his death in 2012. And I say that because Andy wanted to make sure that his story didn't go untold either. Mm-hmm. The reason he's no longer with us is because of the shame and the guilt of being molested by Frankie. He did like I did. He took drugs to numb the pain, and the drugs lowered his ability to make proper decisions, and in the end it cost him his life. And to me, the blood of his death is on the hands of one person and one person alone. That's Frankie Wiley. Yes. But these vultures go after others like us, you know, who come from a family of divorce or worse. You know, they take advantage of this vulnerability, a young boy simply wanting attention of a male role model. And that's their play. It's also known as grooming, and how it eventually leads to the abuse. And, you know, goodness knows how many others are out there, which is why I'm sharing this, because the national crime stats say that an uncaught child molester, if they lived to be 70 years old, has approximately 117 victims.
My goodness.
That's just one person. So, since the, like I said, the state of Georgia has this pathetic statute of limitation on child rape, I'm not able to bring him to justice. I even called Mr. Kenneth Keene at the Georgia Baptist Convention to inform him of this pedophile using his church as a haven for hunting, and his response was to say, sorry, I'll pray for you, but each church acts separately, and there's nothing we can do. Hmm. And after 2 conversations, I wanted to tell him that Frankie had moved churches, but he wouldn't even take my phone calls or emails anymore. So it appears as though the Southern Baptist Church, as an organization, not the individual parishioners, are following in the footsteps of the Catholic Church. They're choosing to deny and cover up, rather to own up to the evil within. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the exception of a recent, this is just new from this, because this just came online a couple days ago, from even when you and I spoke. A man was awarded a $12.5 million lawsuit against the Southern Baptist Church in Florida just a couple days ago.
Awesome.
So I'm hoping that that is the beginning of the end of the cover-ups being covered up. But, you know, we can only hope. The writer Edmund Burke said that the only thing needed for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And it appears as though that's become the case with the Baptist Church, the Roman Catholic Church, schools and universities all over the country, and so many others. I'm not picking on those two. They're just the most, out in the news and the most prevalent in our society. You know, and I wonder how many other adults. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I just, as you're sharing this and starting from this place of like now having reached where you are and trying to advocate and trying to go into these spaces and make a difference. You know, this uphill battle that you're having to fight so often. You know, it's very frustrating and angry. It makes me very angry, of course. And just. In one way, I just simply want to acknowledge you for, having done that work with your particular abuser and then also just reaching out and staying on top of that because it's just astounding how they just move from one place to the next to the mm-hmm. next.
And it makes you wonder how many other adults out there have suffered this same same fate and are unable to bring their abusers to justice due to the insufficient laws held by almost every state in the land. And there's a few. Florida has done it. I think Minnesota's working on it, Massachusetts. But basically, they don't. And these predators know it, and they count on it. Mm-hmm. They count on us not saying anything until it's legally too late. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, as you well know, being a fellow survivor, most of us aren't capable of even acknowledging what happened until, on average, we're usually in our 30s
right.
or 40s.
Yeah.
By that time, the statute of limitations has run out. Yeah. So it's simple math for these predators and the organizations that protect them.
Mm-hmm.
When Dr. Light, the first one I mentioned, Professor Light, contacted the pastor of Trinity Baptist, Rodney Brown, with verification of Frankie's molestation of me, all he said he would do was bring it to the church. Well, guess what? He didn't. So I found an email list of the church, and I sent out a mass mail and so they could know this person that's in their midst. And while, like I said, while he's no longer on staff, so to speak, he's still active with the youth. And what they fail to understand is these predators never stop until they're caught. So the elders at Trinity are either too ignorant or negligent in failing to protect these children. And after I sent this email, Rodney Brown had the audacity to call me and tell me that I was a bad person for splitting for causing a split in his church. Because evidently, when they didn't get rid of him, half the people left.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
To which I replied, first of all, Pastor, it's not your church. The church is people made up of the people there, not the person standing in the pulpit. And the bad person here, he's saying it's me for letting the parents of Trinity know about an admitted child molester with access to their children? No. It's him who chose to keep it secret until he was forced to admit the truth.
Right.
So, it made me wonder. I wonder how many parents of the children of Jerry Sandusky wish they had had that kind of information.
Sure, yeah.
How many little boys would have still had their innocence? How many little boys would have been protected? To me, that pastor is worse than Frankie because a pedophile is sick, as we thought. They don't stop until they're incarcerated or deceased. But Rodney Brown, like the administrators at Penn State, chose to protect that monster. So that's the reason why I decided to do more than just work on my own recovery. I wanted to help my fellow survivors in as many ways as I could.
That's amazing, David. Thank you for sharing that part of your journey. It's kind of it's the post story. Now we're going to kind of go back in time and talk about all the things that led up to you being in the space where you can be such an advocate and can be so adamant and involved. But I can really see how having those experiences over and over again of trying to protect children, trying to get this person gone, and these, you know, this pushback that you're getting from people, how that has really shaped a lot of the work that you're doing. So what would you say are some of the greatest challenges that you faced as a survivor of childhood sexual abuse?
That's a great question, because there seems to be so many, not the least of which was just being able to come forward in the first place.
Sure.
I must have driven by, walked up to the door of that church in Georgia at least 6 times before I finally managed the courage to talk with Pastor White. Thankfully, I did, but that was just the beginning. Once I did, I realized this was not something I could do on my own. So I came to the second greatest challenge for me, which was finding the help I required. I needed some professional help to guide me along the way. And thankfully, there was a therapist willing to donate her time to help me, because at that time, I didn't have any of the money or insurance to cover the call. Mm-hmm. So slowly we worked towards the root cause of my greatest challenge, which was I was deep into drug addiction, and I had no idea why. I wasn't around drug users growing up. I was never pressured, you know, that peer pressure thing we hear about mm-hmm. as kids or anything like that. All I knew is that I was in emotional turmoil, and I lacked the proper tools to handle it. So I did what they call self-medicated with narcotics to numb myself from the pain. And before I knew it, I was hooked and I could not find a way out. So I started attending Narcotics Anonymous, their support groups, found a great sponsor, and slowly realized I had to quit or I would end up incarcerated for good, because I did spend 30 days in jail due to drugs, or worse, I'd end up in a morgue. And so I found another amazing support group called SNAP, which we talked to, you mentioned briefly, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. And even though they've got that priest name in their name, they don't just help people abused by priests. They help all survivors of sexual abuse.
Mm.
So, because you know, although mine was a Protestant member, like I said, thankfully they accept all survivors. So
yeah.
There I was. That's where I was, this abused addict.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what you mean. Tell us more about that, about being an abused addict.
Well, and this is the main issue I wanted to address tonight, and why I'm so grateful to you for having this chance to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So many people don't realize how many survivors of childhood sexual abuse have to face this other demon every day, addiction, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or something else. As an addict, I had to recognize that I was not in control, that I was powerless to the addiction. And it's acknowledging that, this giving up control, which enables us as addicts to begin our healing. But meanwhile, as a survivor of abuse, while we're being abused, we were also helpless and powerless. And so therefore, taking charge is empowering for us. Claiming power is a significant experience in our healing process. It enables us to reclaim what was taken from us as children. So survivors who are also addicts have this razor-thin line to walk, and just as sharp, of giving up control of addiction while regaining control from abuse. And, you know, so when you think about that, it's no wonder why so many fall back off the wagon, are never able to maintain a healthy mental, emotional, physical life, or even commit suicide. You know, the bottom line is we have these solutions that run simultaneous and contradictory to each other. It's mm-hmm. what I call our ultimate battle. And it's why it's so important to get professional help and seek the support from others such as AA, NA, SNAP, Rachel Grant Coaching, other support groups, because mm-hmm. the statistics, I use the term remarkable, but I don't mean it in a good way. Mm-hmm. In a recent study of male survivors sexually abused as children, over 80% had a history of substance abuse. Mm. 75% of women in treatment programs for drug and alcohol reported having been sexually abused. And another 10 study program found that there was as I know from personal life experience and these studies all over the globe, there is a direct correlation to CSA and substance abuse, and it's just not something we can ignore.
Mm-hmm.
I read in another article, instead of looking down at addicts and asking what's wrong with you, wouldn't it be a more productive question to ask what happened?
Right.
Because very few services exist to help with both addiction and abuse.
Yeah.
And it needs to be understood that these two oftentimes go hand in hand. And the
mm-hmm.
services which do exist are often inadequate. They require the individual to heal on the therapist terms, to, you know, get clean first and then we'll talk.
Right.
And often, if you make one mistake, you're out of the program.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the numbers, if I'm not mistaken, that I research, 1 out of 100 people make it through them. And
yeah.
Maybe it's because of the way the programs are designed. Maybe some changes
right.
need to take place. And that's what happened to me. I was forced to, and it ended up working out okay, but it's not always that. But I addressed my addiction first, but then I was able to acknowledge my abuse and face it. And as they say in NA, face life on life's terms.
Yeah.
So,
go
ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to jump in real quick because the timing of this is really interesting. I was just down in Redwood City today at the Sequoia Center, which is a business program out here in California for addiction and recovery. And I was doing a training with their staff and addressing some of these very exact questions. I actually got that exact question. Do they have to get clean before we deal with the trauma? And I thought, oh, what are you talking about? I said, I think I'm about to become the most unpopular person in the room when I answer this question because I said, absolutely not. What are you talking about? The addiction is there because, and oftentimes because of the trauma. So
exactly.
Yeah. So thank you for highlighting that because I know for our listeners, people who are on the call today, you know, there might be this, it's a push and a pull. Like when you have both addiction and you have abuse and you're trying to figure out where do I put that attention and where should my efforts, where should my energy go? Certainly following your intuition and tuning in to what seems to be the most pressing and necessary thing in the moment is important, but there is this idea that you have to do one before you do the other. So I really am glad you're kind of challenging that and highlighting that a little bit.
Exactly. Well, and now that I have had my abuser removed from 3 jobs where he had power and access to kids, it helped me to regain my power. But here's what I also know. I will never have power over the narcotics. They control me in such a negative way, I can never do them without extreme and awful consequences. But because that's what worked for me, it doesn't mean it's going to be the direction a fellow survivor will have to take as a path to healing. What I stress, and it's why I love working with you so much, is for our fellow survivors to seek the professional help that's available to you, whether with its folks like yourself, or with therapists at Together We Heal, or support groups all over, the main thing is if not here, just get help somewhere. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. I want them to know, you know, more than anything, that's what will help them. There were Michael and Cheryl Irving's 2 psychotherapists said in an article I read what I've been saying and feeling for years, so I just thought it best if I quote them rather than try to paraphrase. Survivors need to value themselves, to be true to themselves. Survivors often find it hard to say no to anything, and survivors need to fit in, so they often say yes. We need to understand that treatment for addictions is slow and progressive. You cannot help addicts quickly or with some other drug. Healing from addictions and abuse is possible, and they often go hand in hand. It takes time, and it takes trust. And I think that quote highlights exactly what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So you talked to us a little bit about when you were turning your attention to healing the sexual abuse, some of the challenges you faced. And now can you tell us a little bit about the compounding challenge that you faced in dealing with addiction?
Well, you know, being a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, we often ask ourselves these questions, you know, why me? Why did this happen to me? What have I done to deserve this? I'm just a kid. And that's just the start of questions that we begin to ask ourselves when we fall in prey to these sexual predators. And when dealing with the issues of pain from CSA, people handle it in different ways. Being a man, I can only tell you the struggles that a young boy and a man go through. Initially, as I've mentioned, one of mine was just finding a resource to help me. With most abuse supposedly happening to women, the majority of the available support is directed towards them. But support for men is out there. You might have to look a little harder, but it's there. And that's, I think that's shown in the increase in groups like Together We Heal, like SNAP, 1in6.org is another great one, and many others. But once found, the next step can be even more challenging. If the abuse occurs as a young boy and at the hands of a man, I struggled with the confusion of that arousal. Because even though we learned that physiologically there's virtually no way to stop the erection or even the ejaculation, it does not, you know, as a boy and a man, you begin to question your sexuality.
Sure.
And, you know, because you ask yourself, how could I have been aroused by this disgusting act? And then when you combine this with the still long-held homophobic rhetoric voiced by so many, the confusion gets compounded and magnified. So for myself, what I did was I, quote-unquote, proved my sexuality throughout college by having sex with as many women as I could. And while it temporarily bolstered my ego and repped with the guys, all it really did was hurt many girls' feelings and truly hindered my ability to get to the root of my own pain. So when having promiscuous sex was not enough to keep the hurt and the pain deep down enough in my psyche, as I said earlier, I turned to the drugs. And I started off like most. Go ahead.
Can I pause you there? Yeah, I just want to pause
you
there before we get more into the transition into using alcohol and drugs as the alternative distraction or way of coping, because, you know, this particular topic that you're touching upon, you know, your sexuality as a man and how it's impacted by abuse. First of all, you know, I just want to acknowledge you for talking about it, right? I know with my male clients, this is something that, you know, we work our way up to and discuss and handle. But I know that for so many of the men listening, that it can feel like this is you know, there's something bad or wrong about them and they need to hide that, and, you know, these feelings that they have or don't have or the struggles they have sexually, you know, they feel a lot of shame around. And so, you know, I guess before we go too much further into the alcohol drugs piece, I just have a question that just came to mind, which is, you know, how have you, like, reconciled that for yourself? Like, how have you made your peace with, you know, the sexual abuse and the feelings that occurred then and the responses that happened and, you know, your sexuality today?
Well, as you know, Rachel, I'm an open book. You ask me a question, I tell you no lies. It took me a long time to reconcile that. Because, I'm just going to be real kind of graphically honest here. Again, when you think about when my abuse occurred, it was when I was 12 years, started when I was 12 years old, just coming through the, you know, the puberty stage, you're just starting to, quote unquote, feel your oats as a boy, and a young man. Mm-hmm. And so now I've got this thing and this huge thing in the back of my mind where a man touched me and I was sexually aroused. And yet I know in my head and my heart what he did was wrong. But you got to remember, this was 1981. There was no Oprah. There was no talk shows. There were no people coming forward. There was no help for anyone. And you, and in the South, in rural areas, you sure don't talk about things like this. You don't talk about you know, your drunken uncle, much less being sexually abused. And so I did try to figure out when I was, now what, it wasn't until later, because through college I was, it was the sex, like I mentioned, was specifically with as many women as possible. But then that question keeps coming up because it's buried in your psyche. Well, wait a minute. Does that mean I'm gay because I was sexually aroused? Mm-hmm. And it's a question that, that every man who is abused by a man asks himself. And anyone that tells you different is a liar. But it is. Mm-hmm. It's something they ask themselves. And in some, many cases, they explore to try and find out. I often wonder in some cases if it doesn't flip the switch and drive some people to homosexuality. Now, I'm not a homophobic. I'm not saying that that's the case. I do believe it happens in some cases. Me personally, I believe that most 99.9 whatever are either born gay or they're born straight. I don't believe that it, but I do believe there is
like a
percentage.
Choice or behavior.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I believe that's just like the song says, we're born that way.
Right.
But I do believe some people get so confused that they are driven one direction because of these actions these monsters take.
Sure.
So when I was in these narcotic-induced states, there was sexual exploration on my part with both sexes. But it wasn't until I got clean that I realized there was nothing about same sex that appealed to me, that was any part of me, and all of that was done because of what this monster did to me. And thankfully, through the love and compassion of the therapist and even to this day, my fiance, I know for a fact that, yes, I am a heterosexual male. But yes, it's a struggle that anyone who is a man who's been abused by a man goes through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it really puts into the space all this kind of like gray, everything gets a little gray, a little muddled, yeah. And I think, you know, from a woman's perspective, I think this can also happen for women who've been sexually abused by women. And then also just sexuality overall, you know, because of abuse. You know, I too was really promiscuous when I was a teen, and it's always that, like, it has to do with that, trying to figure out our sexuality, because, you know, the root of where we, like, how we first learned about sex, or our first sexual experience, you know, being rooted in abuse, we get the wrong messages about our bodies, about how we're, you know, what we're supposed to like or not like, or what we do like or not like. And so what I really hear you sharing there is that allowing yourself the space and the time to really just reflect and get tuned in to what really feels right and what is really of a value for you. And, you know, if you're a guy and you were abused and then you are a homosexual, like, it doesn't mean that you're only that way because you were abused. Yeah, that's one of the things I see people struggling with sometimes, is this idea that, well, I'm only this way. So, okay, good. Well, I could talk for hours about that, but I'm not going to. So tell us about, you know, you reached this point where you noticed, okay, this having sex with lots of girls, it's not helping, it's not addressing, and so then you turned to the alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, I would, I started off like most, you know, waiting until I got off work, and I drank until I got that buzzed feeling. And over a number of years, I would drink more and more until I would pass out each night. But by drinking to that point, I made sure that while I was awake, I was either too busy with work to think about the pain or too drunk to understand why I was drinking so much.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, alcohol wasn't strong enough. I would wake up with a hangover and still be back in the same place. So I turned to drugs. And I started off with a club drug. As everybody knows, it's called ecstasy. It was actually once used by therapists for couples struggling to open up and communicate. Obviously, has since become an abused, quote-unquote, party drug, sometimes referred to as a hug drug for that utopia-like effect it gives you. And not only did I no longer feel emotional pain in those times, but possibly of greater import, the feeling, however false it was as if everyone loved me. And this was something I craved above all else, that feeling of love and acceptance. But as any addict will tell you, the more drugs you do, the more you have to do to try and get the same level of high. They call it chasing the dragon. And the problem is you never get it again. So at that point, I amplified that drug with another, trying to extend its feeling with a methamphetamine or speed, you know, crank, whatever name you want to give to it. And when that no longer worked, I moved up to GHB. You hear of it as one of the several, quote-unquote, date rape drugs, but when you use it on yourself, it's like ecstasy times 10. The extreme danger of this drug is that it slows your respiration, and it can do so to the point where you stop breathing altogether. That's what's so deadly about it, is that once you reach a certain point, there's no way of reviving you. And I would do as much as I could do until I would pass out, actually coming close to overdosing on 3 occasions. And that's just that I can validate from what others told me. God knows how many times I actually came close to death. So eventually what occurred to me is what happens to almost all addicts and drug users and abusers. I got locked up, and I spent a month in jail for 2 convictions of drug possession. And it was simultaneously the best thing that could have happened to me and the worst experience of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no doubt that it saved me from ending up in a morgue, having my freedom taken away, being totally humiliated, and my life threatened on 2 occasions while I was incarcerated. I finally realized where my life was headed if I didn't stop taking drugs. So when I was released, I went to NA, went to that therapist I mentioned, and I got the help I needed. And as of today, I have now remained clean for 8-plus years.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wait, do you say cheers for somebody who's a recovering addict?
That's right. Exactly. But here's the deal. Once I got clean, now I had this whole new problem. I finally had to face all of this traumatic emotional pain without any filters, without any buffers. As I said earlier, I had to face life on life terms. And for most of us, it isn't kind and it isn't nice. It's hard. And when you aren't strong emotionally or mentally and don't have the necessary tools to confront this issue, you don't handle it easily. I certainly didn't. It was only with the support of an amazing family and equally incredible friends that I have been able to process this pain and conflict and be able to finally stand on my own 2 feet again, and now with a clean mind and body. And it doesn't mean that I'm still not haunted daily by those memories of the abuse, of the molestation, the sexual assault. It just means now that I have the tools to better handle this battle. Frederick Douglass said a long time ago, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. So let me say that again. It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And this has been absolutely true in my life. The damage done by my abuser, Frankie Wally, was so terrible that the positive done to build me up those first 12 years, he destroyed in just 3. And it's taken 30 years just to begin to get my life back on the right track.
Wow, when you think about all the different things that we use to try to protect ourselves from dealing with the pain and the hurt of abuse, and I really love what you said about, first of all, there's the the struggle of just getting clean and sober. And then it's like the lights go on, but it so sheds light on all of these corners and crevices and things that you haven't wanted to look at and you haven't wanted to deal with. So with
right.
all of that happening, like, what's one to do?
Well, truth is truth, right? And if it is so, then whether we agree with it or not, it's still the truth. You may not agree with the concept of gravity, especially if you're like me when you step on a weight scale. but if you step off a second floor balcony with no net to catch your fall, you will discover the hard cement tasting reality and truth. Copernicus, Galileo, Bruno, and so many other thinkers at one time were called heretics. In the end, what they found to be the truth went against all popular scientific notions of that day, religious beliefs, or merely the values held at the time. And I say that to bring to light the following truth I've discovered in my own life. You must enter your past to fix your present, because if you don't, you'll have no future. And I want to say that one again, too. You have to enter your past to fix your present. If you don't, you'll have no future. And by fix your present, I don't mean make everything okay. I simply mean manage your current situation. And I know it sounds like, you know, a little psychobabble cliche, but like I think I said earlier, as we call something a generalization, it's because it's generally true.
Sure.
And I admit it does sound a bit ominous. And while it may be hard to hear, I'm merely trying to make a point in emphasizing this truth that I discovered in my own life. It wasn't until I went back into my past and, you know, the acknowledgement of the childhood sexual abuse that I endured from ages 12 to 15 that enabled me to begin to work through the issues of the present of that time. And once acknowledged and beginning to heal, I finally, for the first time in almost 10 years, begin to see the potential of a future that lay ahead. And we've touched on a couple, you know, of those things, but I want to kind of briefly go over a few. Under the category of usual but relatively proven therapies is the psychotherapy, CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy, group therapy, self-help groups. And I don't know how much you want me to go into each one of these under defining them. Do you think it would be good for the group for me to do this?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I hear you saying is that, you know, that what you noticed as being your first step was, well, I've got to acknowledge it, I've got to address it, and I got to find some support. You've certainly, like, all throughout what we've been talking about tonight, what really comes through loud and clear is your philosophy and your belief that we can't walk this road alone, and we've got to have those people standing in our corner and holding us and guiding us through this journey. And what you're highlighting here are some different roads that one can take, you know, whether psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, groups or self-help books or self-help support groups. And certainly, yeah, there are pros and cons to all of these. And I think that if people are interested in wanting to kind of figure out, you know, what might be their best next fit, I think they can certainly reach out to us and share their story, and we can maybe help guide them towards their resource and the type of support that would make the most sense based on where they are. But go ahead.
Well, and while those are by no means all of the potential therapies out there, the point that you just said is you are spot on. That's exactly what I'm hoping comes through today, is that no matter which type of therapy you seek out as a survivor of abuse, the point is that you indeed seek one out. And don't stop until you find the one that works for you. It is of the utmost importance that our fellow survivors find professional help. Just like a police officer or a military person, they're required to see a therapist when they go through an extraordinary time of trauma. So we as survivors of CSA need that same assistance. What we have been through is beyond an extraordinary event. It's beyond the pale. And seeking help does not mean we are weak It shows no signs of lacking anything. To the contrary, it means you care enough about yourself and to the ones that love you that you will take the necessary steps to ensure your continued growth as a person. And let me say that again. You aren't weak if you seek help. You're human, and it's okay, and it's permissible for others to help you.
Yeah, beautiful.
You know, due to the derailing of my youth, so to speak, you know, I'm 45, so I now have fewer years left on this earth to do what I believe I was always meant to do, which was to help others in some way. So I've just made a promise to myself and to those that know me and love me. I'm going to spend the rest of the time I have left on this you know, big blue marble to do my best to, one, prevent what happened for me from happening to others, other children, and two, to help other survivors begin that healing process. I'm one of the lucky ones, or at least so say the stats. You know, I should already be reincarcerated, back on the streets looking for my latest high, or dead. And your listeners who have addiction challenges or loved ones that do really need to hear this next part, because having legal issues usually goes hand in hand with addiction. As I mentioned, I was arrested and I spent a month in jail. But my experience with the justice system was the exception, not the rule. Because I did my time, I learned my lesson, and I moved forward. But within 3 years of being released, about 67% of ex-prisoners reoffend. 52% are reincarcerated. And that's a recent study. You know, the rate of recidivism is so high in the U.S. that most inmates who enter the system are likely to reenter within a year of their release. And if you're shocked with those numbers, wait till you hear how many addicts fall off the wagon. Relapse rates from addiction range, depending on the study, from 40 to 60 or 50 to 90, depending on which studies you read. You know, and they vary by the definition of relapse, the severity of the addiction, what type of drug, length of treatment. But the point is clear. Relapse happens more often than not. But of all those statistics that I am fortunate not to be a part of, the last is the most important. For the year 2011, there were over 40,000 drug-induced deaths and 26,000 alcohol-induced deaths. And like I told you, on three different occasions I came close, but thankfully I'm still here today to be a cautionary tale on how not to cope with this abuse.
Man, that is frightening for sure, eye-opening, and it really just highlights, you know, what's at stake, and that this is, you know, this combination of dealing with addiction and abuse trauma, it, you know, we just have to take it on, and we have to figure it out, and I hear that you're so committed to that. So tell me a little bit more now about, you know, Your organization, Together We Heal, how, you know, what role is that playing in all of this?
Okay. Well, let me combine what's next with me with my fellow survivors and addicts to kind of recap the past and look to the future, because ultimately that's what we all want, is some kind of positive future. Mm-hmm. As you know, as we talked about, and I'm not going to beat it up anymore, I was heavily addicted to multiple narcotics. The jail time, the tens of thousands of dollars of lost wages from a career I genuinely cared about. And in varying degrees, it cost me multiple relationships, one of 5 years, another one of four. And this past was destroying my present, and if something didn't give, my future was going to be limited. And my story isn't an isolated one. It's not even unique, and in my perspective, not even as harsh as some have been through. So how do we accomplish this task? How do we get from point A to point B? That's to say, how do we look into our past, into that abyss, without falling back in?
Right.
Then how do we take that information, apply it to our present, so that we have the opportunity to move on into a more positive future? Those are a lot of questions with multiple choice answers. And even if you're not an addict or an alcoholic, I'm sure you've heard the saying, admitting that you have a problem is the first step. Well, with survivors of CSA, this saying has some weight as well. It's just with a little slightly different angle. It's not that we have to admit that we have a problem. We have to admit that a horrible event and crime was perpetrated against us. And it's not an easy or small task. I know that. I've been through it just like you have. Mm-hmm. And then there's another very real motivation behind what I had to do. More than just my own kind of self-serving, self-healing desires behind the action I knew I had to take. More important than even shedding light on the past was the future of the lives of my abuser's potential victims. Since I now know I wasn't his first victim, nor was I his last, and goodness knows, I wished and prayed I had someone had come forward before he got to me. So now it's up to me. Now it's up to me. I now have the strength to face this cold, hard truth. And I knew if the young boys he had access to were to have any chance of a future free from the emotional, physical, spiritual torture I experienced, I was going to have to step up to the plate and tell the truth about what this monster is. And if I was going to have any potential peace with my own future, I had to make sure, to the best of my ability, that no other little boy in his life was going to be molested, abused, or raped. So I did just that. I acknowledged my past, I took action in the present, and I now know I've done all I can within my power to help those boys have a decent future. And in doing so, my future, too, is one of peace and healing. So do whatever you as a survivor needs to do to enter your past in a healthy way, whether it's through one-on-one counseling, group therapy, all the professional that we talked about. Seek it out so that you can begin to fix or manage your present situation. And but in doing this, by beginning to heal, you'll have a chance to take back what was stolen from you and have that future of peace that you deserve. And more than anything, I simply want all other abused addicts to know you're not alone. You are not alone. And so that's the personal side of it. On the professional side, as you mentioned, we started Together We Heal. It is an official nonprofit 501c3 public charity and advocacy group. We're recognized by the federal government. We've done all of our paperwork and all of that. And it's to help others like me who were robbed of their innocence and struggle with a way to even try and stay alive. We provide counseling at no charge to those in need that can't afford it or that don't have insurance. We educate parents on how to better protect their children. I lead a weekly support group for survivors. And by having the support, we help survivors fight the urge to seek out the vengeance that sometimes they want. And if you want, I can kind of list off some of the ways that they can get in touch with us. Our website is, and there's dashes in between there. It's togetherweheal.org, but it's together-we-heal.org or together-we-heal.org. You can follow us on Twitter @together_weheal. And if you go to the website, you'll find all of these different places. If you go to causes.com, we've got a page there. You can like us on Facebook. You can join. We've actually got a group on Facebook. We have a company page on LinkedIn. So there's multiple ways that you can follow us, that you can gain information to resources. And the main reason why I'm asking everybody to please join one or more is because even if you're not a survivor of abuse, and the survivors might not speak out, but they will read in private if they see these helpful sites posted on your wall. And you may never know who you're helping, but believe me, you will. Because I know, I know, as I said, it took me almost 30 years to finally acknowledge and address what happened and to find this process of healing. And I hope this also I want to make clear. For those who have any misgivings or doubt, we do not make $1 from this. We do all of this on a voluntary basis. Any of the donations given go directly to the support of survivors or to help further raising awareness about all matters of CSA. The keeping our social media websites up and going, the travel to give the presentations and the seminars to keep children safer, allows us to keep the grassroots movement going on eliminating these statute of limitation laws. It keeps victims' voices quiet and predators free. So your donations go to all of these things to help survivors, and not one penny goes into anyone's wallet. So I just want to make sure that's very, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are as an organization. We publish regularly, as you know, a blog on our website. We actually get published from other sites online and periodicals. We give presentations. We're going to be doing one March 15th. We're sponsoring a dad's event in Sarasota. We work with Marcy Hilton to lobby reform on these statute of limitation laws and hold accountable these perpetrators for their crimes. We recruit therapists to provide this cost-free counseling. And here's something I'm really, really proud of. I can now say that we have therapists from L.A. to New York, from Canada to England, and now Moscow to New Delhi.
What? Oh, my goodness.
We are on three continents, my friend.
Wow. My goodness. Y'all see what I mean? This guy is blazing. He is unstoppable.
And so it's just our goal to always be able to provide for those that are in need.
Well, you guys certainly deserve it. So, you know, I really want to encourage everybody who's listening to, first and foremost, take advantage of the amazing resources that are on their website, together-we-heal.org. And certainly keep an eye out for that donation button because, $1, $2, $5, every single dollar matters. And the fact that you're providing free therapy is astounding and amazing and is such a need. So certainly go there, support Together We Heal, and also use it as a resource. You know, look and see what they're offering and what you can take advantage of, even if you're in Moscow, apparently.
or New Delhi, India.
Or New Delhi. You're amazing. You're amazing. And, you know, David, I'm just so inspired, you know, by your story and this organization that you've created. And really, take advantage of the resources that David is sharing with you guys. His heart is so big. And anything you ask for, he's going to try to sort out a way, try to find a way to help you out. So please, please don't fall into the trap of, they can't help me or I don't deserve it or my problem's too big. Get into touch with David and reach out. So, I think, first of all, I'm just like, I have so much in my head right now, and I'm so touched, and I'm so moved by your story, and always your, big heart, your openness, you're willing to let people into your life and into your journey. It's just profoundly inspiring to me. And I know you guys, as you've been listening, maybe you've had some questions or maybe, you're dealing with something and you're not quite sure what to do about it. So I think you ready to do the Q&A, David?
Fire when ready.
Okay. All right, so folks who are listening, this is how it works. You can press *6. I'll have to turn on the Q&A. There it is. You're going to press *6 on your phone, and that will put you into my caller queue, and I will read out the last four digits of your phone number and then set you live so that you can talk with David. You can also text questions to 650-283-5215. Again, the number is 650-283-5215. And I'll read off your questions and let David answer that way as well. Of course, we're going to do the best to answer as many of your questions as we can. And if for any reason, you know, whatever you're asking maybe needs to be taken offline, we'll make sure that we can find the time and a way to support you there. And we'll go from there. So if anyone has questions, go ahead, star 6, or text 650-283-5215. And I'm actually going to make sure I have this set up here. Okay. Perfect.
And
so,
has anybody already posed a question? If not, I was just going to say thank you to you. We got some questions already.
We do have questions already.
Good. Yeah. All right, let's go. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So let me. It's last 4 digits are 2921. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Erin, and I work for a nonprofit, and we provide free services for survivors of abuse, any kind of abuse. And my question was, is it re-traumatizing? Are you talking about exploring your sexuality, with both sexes? Is it re-traumatizing if it's the same sex as a person who was your perpetrator?
It was a little muffled. Can you repeat the question?
Oh, sure. I was just wondering, in exploring your sexuality with someone who is the same sex as the perpetrator, was that re-traumatizing for you?
To tell you the truth, at the time, the couple of years that was going on, I was so high on narcotics, I couldn't tell you. What I can tell you is no, it wasn't re-traumatizing because I was so high on the narcotic. They numbed, as I said, the reason I was doing them was to numb myself from the pain. So, whether it was in a group of 2 or 4 or 10 or whatever was going on at the time, no, that wasn't re-traumatizing because the narcotics were just numbing me from having any other feeling other than that feeling of being high.
I guess what I also wanted to ask about that was, was it re-traumatizing? Did that add at all to any confusion or any anxiety or anything like that when you weren't high then?
No, as a matter of fact, to the opposite, it clarified once I was clean and sober, it clarified that, as I mentioned earlier, nope, I'm definitely a heterosexual male.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. That was really inspiring. I'm very impressed with you, and I'm so thankful for all the work that you do.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And if there's anything else, be sure to visit our website. And I'm very accessible. My number is listed there. My email address is listed there. If you ever have any questions in the future, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm always available.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Yeah, it's an interesting question that Erin asks, sex in general, when we're coming out of abuse or coming out of addiction and wanting to get into relationship again and have a healthy sex life, there are certainly, things that we have to sort through. And one of the things I noticed with my client – oh, go ahead.
But I could see her – what she was wanting – I can see her point. Where some people who might not be using narcotics or alcohol, I can see where it might re-traumatize them in that process of having the sex with the same sex as the abuser. And so I understand her point, completely. I understand what she was asking. Like I said, for me, that wasn't the case because of where the state I was in, mindset-wise and drug-wise. But I can see where some young men or some young women, it would be re-traumatizing, very much so.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and you know, we in a lot of ways, just re-traumatizing experiences in general, right? You know, when we are walking this path of recovery.
I'll tell you, you know, it took me a long time, you know, forget the same-sex part. It took me a long time to even be open, to open up and have loving intimacy with, you know, with the person that I, you know, that I was in love with because of the sexual trauma. You know, that's, to me, that's the greater challenge, is being able to finally really open up to the one who you're going to spend the rest of your life with.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's so very true. And, you know, for me, my experience a lot of the time was that, you know, sex was easy. I didn't have a hard time having sex, but I had a hard time feeling anything.
With intimacy. The intimacy was the issue.
Enjoying it, you know, connected to what I desired, right? It was always from this space of just, like, obligation. It's about this other person. I don't have any choice here. And I know, you know, for me personally, and then, you know, a lot of my clients that I work with, it's about, okay, you know, my body did something that I didn't want it to do.
Right.
And then it's almost like this punishing, blaming feeling, you know,
right.
So even just getting connected with your body and enjoying the sensations and not feeling like there's something bad or wrong because you're having those responses. Yeah. Yeah.
Right there,
I think we should have a whole day.
We could have a whole other topic on that.
We totally could. And, you know, and like I said, I think, you know, this has been an area that I think female sexuality after abuse, and there is a really great book, and I'll see if I can think of it before we get off the phone tonight, but there is a really great book about, you know, specifically healing around sexuality. But even that book, it's so, like, as you read it, it feels in the feminine, right? And
right.
So what men go through and what they're individually and very particularly dealing with, like, we just need to raise awareness about that, because I think there are some nuances, there are some differences. And so,
well, I think one thing we can share with the audience is that you and I are working on something currently.
Yeah.
Is that we are, you know, I'm currently writing a book that's going to share all of these experiences in detail, and you're actually editing the book. And so I think some of the things we're talking about, once we release it, people will be able to hear a more male perspective on this issue. And I remember when you first mentioned it to me that you thought that was something that was the reason why it was needed, is because there are quite a few female perspective books and information out there, but there's not as much for the male's perspective.
That's right. Yeah.
So on the near horizon, folks.
keep your eye out, folks. It's coming.
Right.
So, all right, we have another question. The last four digits are 1288. Go ahead.
Hello, it's Ken Hurd.
Hey, Ken, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Excellent.
It's great to hear both of you discussing these issues, and it's just amazing to me how articulate you can be, my friend. I want to just not so much ask a question as to make a comment to let the world know that I do very much want to become part of your orbit of Together We Heal, David, and look forward to making that happen soon. And Rachel, you and I have a date for tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that conversation. So, and for the audience that don't know me at all, of course, I live in Canada, and it's just too far to fly to do it in person, but I'm thrilled and excited and motivated and inspired by each of you and both of you together make a huge difference. My work in the field began in 2000 when I heard a calling to do something about my abuse. I'll not go into that story now, but I'll just say that the result is the agency called Emmaus Cares, E-M-M-A-U-S, Cares, in Canada, that has 85 volunteer-trained therapists doing the work, and it's just sensational to see that going on. And I'd like to replicate that through the brand of Together We Heal, and take it across Canada. In every community
that
I can make that happen. So I'll leave it to David to be in touch with me, and I'll call you tomorrow.
Awesome.
Rachel, thank you very much for your leadership and your generosity. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Oh,
thank you. Appreciate that very much. Very kind.
Absolutely. And, you know, Ken, what really comes up for me when I listen to Ken is just, you know, the united front that, you know, we can have when we all work together, and that, and just the point you've been reiterating, and I'll reiterate again, and it's that people, there are so many resources, there's so many opportunities. There's just, you don't have to keep suffering. There really are lots of ways to get out there and to move forward and, you know, reach out and grab that life and move towards, you know, this person that you want to be. One question that's coming to mind while we wait for listeners to think about their questions or text, again, the number is 650-283-5215 if you want to text your question, is what are some of the key differences that you notice for yourself? Like, how are you living today? You know, you're not using drugs and alcohol to suppress or numb or disappear. So what are some of the things that you're doing instead?
A big part of it is the work. As a matter of fact, hang on, let me give you a quote that as you know, I'm big on quotes.
I really do.
Well, you know, because it just shares so much about, you know. All right, so Pablo Picasso said, "The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away."
Wow.
The meaning of life is to find your gift, and the purpose of life is to give it away. So to answer your question, how I am able to stay clean, how I am able to not get buried in the mire of abuse is, one, I have my weekly support group that I don't just lead. I get just as much from, as, because I don't go in there with an agenda saying, here's what we're going to talk about this week. It's all open, and it's all peer-led. We all work together to talk about what's going on and how we can help each other. I have a therapist that I speak with on a regular basis, and I give away my purpose in life, which is to help my fellow survivors. And so that, to me, is the difference, and that's what helps me not fall into that. Because I'll give you a perfect example. Just night before last, as I mentioned now, see, I'm eight years in. Let's see, I took November, December. I'm 8 years and I'm almost 4 months clean. Mm-hmm. And night before last, out of the blue, I had this overwhelming feeling to get high. Hadn't had a feeling like that in months.
Wow.
That's how strong addiction is. And had it not been for me giving my sponsor a call out of the blue at 1 o'clock in the morning, and him being the good guy that he is, saying, "Okay, let's talk through it. Let's play the tape.
Yeah.
You know, let's, you know," because it never leaves you. It's always there, and so it's still a daily struggle, but it's one now that, having the tools and the resources to deal with it, I'm able to manage it and to work through it and to keep a positive healthy recovery going.
Beautiful. So really, like, that surrounding yourself. And I think you better make a note of this. Give It Away, I think, is an amazing book title.
All right. Good point.
Well, sorry, folks who are on the line. We're going to do a little work while you're here with
us. Exactly.
You can, you know, raise your hand now if you think Give It Away is a good,
good book title.
We'll take a quick survey.
I like
our
that.
To raise your hand and vote for that book title. But so, yeah, awesome. Yeah, that's really beautiful. And, man, you do that so profoundly well. I mean, yeah, I think that you're totally living that and such an example for all of us. Awesome. Okay, well, so folks, if let me just check the, how are we doing on time. Oh, we're doing great. Okay, so, you know, we're here for another 10 minutes or so. So don't be bashful. Don't be shy if you have questions. Even if you just need like another, well, what was that website again or anything like that, certainly feel free to press *6, raise your hand, or text 650-283-5215.
Let me read those again just so they can have them again. Because the Facebook ones are, because they're a little bit longer, but if you go to, I just moved the cursor off. So if you go to, obviously, www.facebook.com, there's two different things you can do. facebook.com/togetherweheal.org, O-R-G, so it's just together, no dashes on this, on the facebook.com/togetherweheal.org, O-R-G, you can like us there, or on facebook.com/groups/TogetherWeHeal. You can ask to join the group there and some other great resources on that. And again, the follow us on Twitter @together_weheal. And as always, the website together-we-heal.org.
Yes. Okay, good. All right, we have a question. It is, what are some books that offer a male perspective about surviving child sexual abuse?
Great question. And I have, hang on, let me go to the website. Hang on one.
So you're going to the Together We Heal website right now?
I am.
Okay.
And
then, so just talk us through, there's a resource.
Well, here we go. All right, so there's one called Abused Boys, The Neglected Victims of Sexual Abuse. Let me repeat that again. It's Abused Boys, The Neglected Victims of Sexual Abuse. And that's by Mick Hunter, M-I-C, Hunter, H-U-N-T-E-R. There's another one that's done that is, it's got both men and women. Even though it's got more women's stories, it does have some good men's stories. And it's called Surviving Childhood Sexual Abuse. And again, it's just Surviving Childhood Sexual Abuse. And that is by Carolyn Ainscough. Let me spell her name. C-A-R-O-L-Y-N. And the last name is A-I-N-S. Cough, C-O-U-G-H, and K-Toon, K-A-Y, last name T-O-O-N. This also has a guidebook, that Surviving Childhood Sexual Abuse has a guidebook.
Nice.
It is excellent. I've actually worked through it myself. Those are two just off the top of my head. If that person will, go ahead, I was going to say, if they'll send me an email, that you, if you go to the website, you'll see my email. I can email you some others. Of course, there's one called Beyond Surviving.
Who wrote that?
There's one called Beyond Surviving, The Final Stage in Recovery from Sexual Abuse, that I highly recommend. Author is Rachel Grant.
You're so fabulous. Yes, indeed. Yeah, I did actually write my book from the perspective that it was gender neutral, that, and I've worked with both men and women through my program, Beyond Surviving, for sure. So I'll toss out two other options. There's Boys Cry 2 by John Mark Club.
Yeah,
John Mark Club. And there's another, this isn't necessarily a recovery book, but it's Duane Katene, K-A-T-E-N-E. He has a book called Neon Signs, and it's kind of like a journal, flashbacks, poems. You know, it's just kind of I call it like a sensory journey as opposed to like a workbook journey or a reading a memoir kind of a thing. But it's really beautifully done. And yes, so you can email David at dpittman@together-we-heal.org, or you can email me, coach@rachelgrantcoaching.com, or you can email us both. And we'll be sure to...
There's two T's.
Did I say two T's? Did I only say one?
Well, no, you just didn't. You just said D. Pittman. I always like to let people know it's P-I-T-T-M-A-N.
Thank you. I really, in my head, thought I had spelled it out.
No, that's all right.
Okay. All right, so we have a question. The last four digits are 8075. Go right ahead.
Hi, I'm a survivor. And I recently relapsed, and I'm going through counseling, but I'm not having a counselor right now. I just see the doctor, and I've been trying to get Xanax so I wouldn't go on to the hard stuff, but it's really, they won't give it to me. So I don't know. I'm just... Hearing you talk has really helped me, and thank you for your bravery. That's all I really wanted to say.
Well, you mentioned that you have seen. Do you have a therapist that you're able to talk with right now, or are you in need of one?
Well, I have a therapist. I did have a therapist, but her caseload was really heavy, and we're in a really small town. And my children actually see her too, but for other reasons. So it's just...
Well, would you like for us to talk either later tonight or tomorrow and see if we can get somebody for you?
That would be nice. I do live in a small town, and I'm I guess you can say I'm concentrated in one place, and I don't have a car, and it's just like
that'll be no problem, because you can even do this on. You can even have a you can talk with our therapist over the phone. So you don't even have to worry about, you know, seeing someone there. So do you have a pen and paper so I can give you my number and my email address so you can give me a call or email me?
Okay. I do have you on Facebook. Let me see. Oops.
No problem. Take your time. I'm here.
Okay. Hello?
Yep. So you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So it's the letter D.
Okay.
Letter P, I-T-T-M as in Mary, A-N as in Nancy. So it's D. Pittman at together-we-heal.org. And my number is 754-234-7975.
Okay, thank you so much.
So just give me a call if you will. I've got a thing first thing in the morning, so if maybe around noon or one, if you could call me then or email me then, and we'll definitely get you connected with a therapist. Whatever time after 12 o'clock tomorrow will be fine. Whatever time is convenient for you.
Okay, because I'm...
And David is on the East Coast, so he's telling you East Coast time, yeah.
East Coast, okay, thank you, after 12. Thank you so much. You guys are doing such good work, and I appreciate you guys, so...
That's what we're here for. We're here to help.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, hon. Exactly. And I'm glad you really highlighted the fact that your therapist can work by phone and by Skype. And there's actually, you know, a lot of in that world right now around therapy, there's, you know, some laws and stuff for licensed therapists that, you know, they have to wiggle around in. But you guys are on point by making it really available this way. And that's also part of the reason why I do coaching the way that I do, you know, by phone and by Skype. Because, yeah, you're not always able to meet face-to-face,
right?
Exactly. And people need to have that access. So I actually didn't even know that your therapist worked by phone. So I learned something, too. So I'm excited about that. That's amazing. Yeah. How many therapists do you guys have over there at Together We Heal right now?
We've got 15 that specifically donate their time with us. Those are the ones that I've mentioned from L.A. to New Delhi, India. Then we've got an additional 25-plus. We've partnered up with Victim Services of Palm Beach County. And though, if you are either a resident of Palm Beach County or the crime occurred in Palm Beach, if you meet either one of those criteria, you have access to all of their therapists, their support groups, their victim services, all of the things they do. They're just an amazing group, and again, no charge for any of their services when you come through us to go to them, or not even when you come through us, they don't charge either. That's why we partnered up with them, because we, you know, as you know, but the reason why I did this was I wanted to be founded on the same terms as the St. Jude's Children's Hospital, where no one's ever turned away because they don't have the means. Now, you know, if someone has the ability to pay for it, then certainly we have therapists and you can pay them for that. But primarily what we're wanting to do is to help the folks that don't have the financial means or that don't have the insurance. That's what our focus is to do. And then those are the ones we want to help.
Yeah. And, you know, is the process for getting that support, like, just that straightforward? Like, they call and say, you know, this is who I am and this is what I'm looking for, and you just try to, like, how do you match up somebody with a therapist?
Great question. I know each of the therapists by having spent a lot of time on the phone or face-to-face speaking with them, so that I know them on a personal level. And so I know, and they're all different. I did not get cookie-cutter therapists. I have some that have one philosophy and some that have another, because I know that the needs are just as varied and great for survivors. So I wanted a good variety of therapists and their talent. So what I do is, like the caller that was just with us, once she reaches out to me, I'll spend a little time talking with them. And based on their need, I will, you know, put with them who I think is the best therapeutical fit based on the therapist themselves.
Gotcha.
And it really is that simple. We go through that, and then I do an introduction email to the therapist. And from that point forward, it's strictly between the client and the counselor.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, so low barrier to entry, really easy. I love that. Just really straightforward for folks.
We don't make it hard on people at all.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, well, right, you know, just the step of saying, I need some support, I'm struggling here, is such an important initial step. And so when you do that and then you get, you know, roadblock here, obstacle there, you know, it's just, it just compounds and makes things that much harder and more difficult for folks. So kudos to you.
You could hear it in her voice.
That
she was sincere and that it was a big step for her to say that and ask that. And that's why I had no problem saying, here's my phone number, call me.
Right. Exactly. So, awesome. So folks are hanging out. So if you guys have questions, go ahead, press *6, or you can go ahead and text me at 650-283-5215. So what's the next big thing on the horizon for Together We Heal? Like, What's the? We have the book. I know the book. We're working on the book.
We got this great event in March, March 15th.
Yeah.
I was asked by a guy named Jim McKenzie. He runs an organization that they wanted to do an event for dads, all about dads, to give them the tools to be the best dads they could be. So he's organized this event that has people from all different backgrounds, whether it's to help dads with financial, to help them with things around the house, to help them be better parents. Which the reason why he asked Together We Heal come on board was the obvious reason. What can they do to help protect their kids from these sexual predators out there? So they've asked us to help be one of their sponsors. And on March 15th in Sarasota, we're going to do an all-day event. He's got one former NFL, Plaxico Burress, is going to be one of the people there, NFL wide receiver. He's going to have Hank Basket, who is a former reality TV star, also NFL player with Indianapolis Colts. Plus a few surprise guests that are going to be there. So it's going to be a really exciting event. It's going to be all day long, and it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. So if you go to our website, go to the blog, you'll see the thing on the Expo for Dad, and you'll see the link where folks can sign up and go to it. It's going to be awesome. I really can't wait. And I'm going to be doing my particular section. I will be giving my speech on how parents can better protect their children and how to talk with them about childhood sexual abuse.
Well, awesome. And I'm making a note for myself right now because I would love to have you on Real Talk with Rachel to address that because, that area and prevention is not always, the area that I work in. I usually work more in the recovery and intervention, but that piece is just so, so important. And so, we'll talk more about that because, how to protect. And how to look, those warning signs. Yeah. Awesome. So that's exciting. And congrats for that. Really getting on that platform and on that stage and getting to share your message with, another community and really getting out there. So awesome.
We're excited about it. And I'm also now in the process of reaching out, now that we've formed this partnership with the Palm Beach County Victim Services Department, I'm reaching out to other victim services departments all across the country to try and partner with them as well so that people, if they come to us and they're in Des Moines, Iowa, or, Minneapolis, Minnesota, we can help them get that. And the other big thing that we're working on is with Blair Corbett with Ark of Hope for Children.
Oh, yeah, I know Blair.
He and I want to help people be able to establish their own local support groups for survivors of CSA. Mm-hmm. Right now, one of the big roadblocks is if you don't have a 501c3 number, companies or hospitals or libraries won't let you meet there. So what we're in the process of doing is because Blair is like has the same mindset as Together, Ark of Hope has the same mindset as Together We Heal, has the same mindset as Rachel Grant Coaching. We don't care about who gets credit. We just want people to get the help they need.
Exactly.
So what we're going to do is he and I are going to work together so that people can use whichever of our 501c3s they want to use or can use or will use so that they can start their own support group and give them some, we're going to write up some guidelines and some things, some help techniques for them to start their own support groups so that.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, that's for folks listening that, you don't have support in your area, create the support. Yeah,
exactly.
Start these groups.
Exactly.
And so, awesome. So let's go to the next question, and it's 1383. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Linda.
Hi, Linda.
And Rachel, thank you so much.
I think that giggle means you know her.
Just a little bit.
Linda is my fiance.
Oh, well, look at there.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Linda. So nice to finally meet you. I've heard so much about you.
As well as I have heard so many wonderful things about you, and thank you for your support so much. I have a question, and I know a little bit, but I, like so many others, have not come and confronted my abuser. David, if you can, and I don't know, Rachel, if you have, how much did that help with your healing? Because that, as you know, David, sometime mm-hmm. I want to do that. I don't want that perpetrator doing that more, but there's such a fear out there.
Rachel, do you want to, because I know that Lynn and I have talked about it a little bit. Would you like to answer it first from your perspective and the female perspective, and then I'll give some thought?
Sure. So whenever I start, the journey of recovery with a client, we talk about all the things they want to maybe accomplish or achieve, and often on the table is, I want to have this, you know, moment where I really tell them like it is, you know, and I say, okay, great. Don't worry about that. We're going to get there. It's just the last chapter in the book. And there's like this, oh man, really? But yeah. And so the first thing I just really want to say is for anyone who's thinking about, I want to have that conversation, first of all, knowing about the groundwork to put in place, really getting yourself into a space where no matter what that person says, no matter what that person does in response, that you're going to be able to stay grounded in who you are, in your truth. And I'm happy to share the chapter from the book on that, which kind of helps people like develop a game plan. The other little piece I'll throw out there is that I often use the word conversation instead of confrontation. Because when we go into a confrontation, we have something to gain or lose, right? We have to win. We have to convince. And the only way we can come out of that and feel good is if we've, influenced the person or gotten them to agree or gotten them to acknowledge. And for me, so that those are just some foundational ideas to just, you know, kind of be simmering and pondering and thinking about before actually taking, you know, the step. For me personally, my grandfather died before I ever had the opportunity to talk with him and ask and share with him and tell him the impact that his choice to abuse me had had on my life. And so I did what I call a simulated conversation. And I just wrote out what I wish, you know, what I wanted to say, what I hoped to have been able to have said, and, you know, pretended he was in the chair across from me and spoke that truth. And if I can encourage you at all, Linda, really what I want you to know is that the moment of conversation with the abuser is really just about the moment of claiming the truth of the experience for yourself. And it has so very little to do with the person that you're talking to. So that fear that you're feeling, like, I get it, and it's often rooted in what we think are going to be the consequences and the responses and how they're going to react and all that. And so spending some time kind of thinking through, well, if they respond this way, this is what I'm going to do, or if this is the response that I get, this is what I want to say, will bolster you and help you kind of lay that groundwork to walk into that conversation from a really strong, present, prepared space.
Okay. No, I get that. I also want to go into it with just knowing that I don't want him to continue, and if he is, and I'm thinking, you know, I know he has grandkids. I know he probably coaches the grandkids' softball teams or baseball teams, mm-hmm. and is just out there. And so like David, he wants to call Frankie out for wherever he, whatever church he may go to. Me,
yeah.
I want to do the same, but mm-hmm. I have to have that conversation first and for myself just to, I'll get there.
Yeah.
I will. But.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
all
you
of
and
this
I,
time.
I was going to say, and like Linda, like you and I have talked in the past about this conversation that you've been talking about wanting to have, the mindset, and as I know I've told you this, but I want the listeners to hear it, the mindset I had going in was not to, quote-unquote, get him. It was to
mm-hmm.
expose him, to call him out for what he is, and it was for the protection of others. It wasn't for a mind of vengeance or revenge. It was for the help and aid of others. That was my mindset going in once I was at a healthy enough position to have that conversation with that pastor and with him. And that made all the difference. And something that Rachel said that I didn't even realize that I did was spot on, was that it was a conversation and not a confrontation. And I love that. So thank you. That just helped me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other thing that came to mind as you were saying that is really being present to what you can and you can't control in that conversation. So in having the conversation with the abuser, we can't control whether or not they then become remorseful or whether or not they then, you know, have a light bulb go off that says, hey, cut it out, you know, and or I need to stop or I need to change. Like, that's an outcome that we don't have any influence or control over. So really focusing that energy and attention on the things that you do have authorship over and about, and certainly by being able to go and talk to, as David has done, you know, go to the people who are in charge or people who might be able to get that person away, or, you know, so that these children can be, you know, protected. You know, you can have more influence in that space.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you.
I'm so glad you called.
So, Linda,
before
you run away.
Yes.
Oh, you love her. Uh-huh. I love her, too. So, Linda, before you run away, I want to just close the loop of that conversation. So having, you know, based on, you know, kind of what you heard, what you're thinking, like, what are you present to or what are you noticing would be, like, the first next thing for you to do that would start moving you towards this ultimate goal of being able to have this conversation?
Oh, gosh. A lot of prayer for me, and just making sure that I am grounded enough and that I can carry it. And
mm-hmm.
just like you said, that I have got such a great support system, family, and first and foremost, David, who has mm-hmm. been through and is always 110% with me for anything and everything in my life, so that he's my support. And so mm-hmm. I know with that I can do anything. So to go, you know, I'm not sure where I'm going to go next as far as what to do. It's just, like I said, a lot of prayer. And I am currently seeing a psychologist, so which is great. It's been helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, just talking.
One step at a time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one little step at a time. It's beautiful.
And this,
well, you're on the path.
This has helped me. Right. This has helped me so much just tonight and listening through with everything. The more I hear even David talk about stuff, especially with you and on the radio, I learn that much more. So it's just keeping myself focused in that and positiveness and putting myself around positive people is great. So,
absolutely.
And a lot of laughter, and that's what we do, David and I. I don't think we do too much of anything else. So,
I bet. I can imagine you two just having good times, having good times. Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us, Linda. It was really, really nice to have you here. Great question. Great question.
Then I'll call you a little bit, sweetheart.
All right. I love you.
Love you.
Bye. You guys are awesome. Oh, my goodness. I
bet
love
you
it.
Never
Thank
had
you.
That conversation on one of your
no,
calls
that's
before.
That's the best recording. I love the recording of this. It's going to be like forever and ever, like the little love bird. Like, hi, honey. How are you doing today?
Yeah, it was really interesting after we, or ironic, after we got reacquainted from dating in high school, and it was just a short-lived, you know, mm-hmm. high school romance. But then, you know, flash forward, 25 years later, and we're getting reacquainted, and as I'm telling her about what I'm doing with Together We Heal, that's when she told me. She said, well, I've never told anybody else this, not anyone in my family or anything, but I was also. So we have this uncommon bond together that now we're using and working and helping each other with it, through it, and helping others together. So it's pretty amazing.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Lucky dog. Lucky dog, you.
I am very blessed. She's a wonderful woman.
Fabulous. Well, okay, folks, I'm going to give you a final call. We're going to start wrapping up here. Again, you can text 650-283-5215, or you can press *6 on your phone to raise your hand. Any final thoughts, questions? Even if there's just something that really resonated with you that, you know, made a difference that you're taking away and you'd like to share that, that's always wonderful to hear as well. So for me, I will say that, you know, what I'm taking away, first of all, is that just this overwhelming courage and advocacy, you know, this place that you come from, David, where you know, this giving of yourself, using your journey, your story, what you've experienced to make a difference in the lives of others. And I just support it wholeheartedly. And while I was saying all that, we got a question. So,
yeah, cool.
All right. 0232. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Tom.
Hey, Tom.
I was interested in the therapist you work with and that, and I've always been interested in the idea of getting a group together that could have therapist input, but maybe not every week, and that we could meet over a tool like Skype and computers and that, so that...
Right.
The remotely people out there in hinterland that has no therapists easily available mm-hmm. to them, at least have a group session and stuff like that. Is that something that you can do within your organization?
So, David, the question is, about, you know, you've talked to us about how you can connect individual therapy, and mm-hmm. I think what he's curious about is there an opportunity or a possibility to connect and have groups this way through, you know, online Skype group, so to speak.
So like creating a group therapy session. Yeah, it would be possible because there's free software out there. It's like a GoToMeeting, only instead of GoToMeeting that costs money. There are some programs out there that will allow you to have an online group conversation via your computer. So, yeah, it's certainly a viable possibility. It's not one that I have thought of doing right now simply because we're doing so many things, but it is to answer you directly, Tom. It's definitely something that I would be open to looking at if someone like yourself would be interested in helping to kind of help us kind of get it going. I would certainly be open to doing that. Absolutely.
several years ago, we started healing circles on a male survivor. And the same group of people got in a chat room every week, and it was very productive. But I just kind of thought maybe it's time we can take it to the next level. And,
do they not have that sort of feature there? Well, with the male survivor group.
Well, I'm looking for something outside, something more.
Okay. You don't have to go into the. How about we do this? Did you get my phone number and email address when I was giving it out to the lady earlier?
I can get it. I'll send you a message on the Facebook page.
Okay. Perfect.
Does that work?
Perfect. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. It's a great idea.
It is a great idea, and it's one that I also am really hoping that I can find a way to start doing more webinars and groups. You know, I've been thinking a lot about how I can take the Beyond Surviving program and do it that way as well. I love the group environment too for survivors because just having that camaraderie and being able to, you know, hear the stories of other people and like, oh, I'm not so crazy. Other people feel this way too. I know, you know, it makes a big difference. All right, caller, we got 1288. Go ahead.
Hello, folks. It's Ken Hurd again. Just to say that I'd be glad to offer some leadership in developing that Skype program.
Okay.
Oh my goodness, we're rallying. I love it, Ken. That's awesome.
That?
So you've already got a team.
My career involved a fair bit of training and stuff. So I'm not a therapist, but I've sure had a lot of it. for whatever good it did me. And mine was mostly psychiatric, so I'll just leave it at that, okay?
We're all with you.
None of them ever wanted to discuss, heaven forbid, child sexual abuse. Anyway, in our conversations in the next few days, let's see if we can get something going.
Sounds great.
Well,
thank you so much, Ken.
Thank you. Last time I rung off, I shut down the whole thing, so I just have to be careful here. Good night, and thanks again.
Good night, Ken. Technology gets the best of us sometimes, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Awesome. All right, David. Well, I think we're going to start wrapping up. So, you know, what are your final thoughts for tonight?
Well, first, and foremost and above and beyond all else, thank you, Rachel, for the opportunity for me to be able to tell, you know, not only my story, but to let your listeners know about Together We Heal. And hopefully they've learned, you know, how closely hand-in-hand DSA is tied to substance abuse and addiction. I hope we have been able to help educate those who might not have known, helped my fellow survivors who are struggling with it to know that they're not alone, that hope, help, and healing is available. It's not just a slogan. It's a fact. You know, you've heard me give out my number and email address a couple times now. You can say a lot of things about me, but I put my money where my mouth is. And if I can help, I will. And if I can't, then I'll certainly try to find someone who can. So I appreciate you not only as a colleague, I appreciate you as a friend. I appreciate you for all the things that you do for our fellow survivors. It was an honor to be a part of tonight's show the message we were able to get out tonight. Thank you for that.
Beautiful. Well, you are more than welcome. I am always and ever grateful anytime I get to spend time with you. I always walk away just smiling and and feeling good and feeling full of hope and full of energy and just rejuvenated. Everyone, thank you so much for being with us here tonight. And Again, the website for Together We Heal, together-we-heal.org. If you want to learn more about me and my work and what I'm up to, I also have lots of free resources on my website as well. You can go to rachelgrantcoaching.com.
And
I'm going
to
take everybody.
Be sure to go to her site. Just be sure to go to her site. It's an awesome site.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and take everybody off mute so that everybody can kind of say goodbye. Whatever it is you'd like to say. So everyone's off mute. Good night, everyone.
I love you.
Good night, everybody.
I love you, Sarah.
Thank you, everybody.
It's cold in Canada, I can tell you.
Oh, in Minnesota.
I guess you don't want to hear about our 78 degrees we had in South Florida yesterday, huh?
Well, all I know is that Louisiana doesn't know how to drive in an inch of snow. I don't know how that works. Good night.
All right, good night, everybody.
Thank you.